Salutations, Grumpsters. This is another episode of The Tech Grumps with myself, Tom Morris, our regular host, Ian Forrester. Say hello, Ian.
Hello.
And hello. We have two guest hosts, but calling them guest hosts is a bit silly considering they're on almost every bloody week. We have David Eastman.
Hello.
And
happy Christmas.
We have Ibiza NASA.
Ho ho fucking ho.
And ooh, it's a bit late for Christmas, but this might be out, you know, soon. It might be out for the new year. It might be out after the new year. Well, I might put out the episode which we haven't put out yet for the new year, and then put this one out after the new year. So
that's true. When I said happy Christmas, I meant Christmas 2010. In case I was going to.
Next week, the Easter episode.
Yeah.
What episode will we be?
So it's looking like it's going to be a really good summer. What do you guys
think? I want to upload that access.
Anyway, now that the new iPad is out...
What?
No.
Will be by the time this is out.
Yeah, exactly. So let's go straight into it. Ian, you want to talk about GoDaddy.
Yeah, man.
For those who don't know,
swear,
what is
right?
GoDaddy? Just some might...
GoDaddy is... Well, I thought originally they just do very, very cheap domain names, yeah? They do very extremely cheap domain names. I think actually they were one of the guys that like really pushed the money down on domain names when it was used to be very expensive. Anyway, so
they cheap domain names and you get what you pay for.
Yes, that's very true. Now they also do hosting as well, and you know, I decided after quite a lot of thought to go with GoDaddy. I don't know why. I just thought, well, you know, I want somewhere to host my blog, and I want somewhere where it's just running WordPress. It's very simple, and it's done. And then what saw it to be was they just introduced European servers.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, you know, it's very cheap. I just want somewhere to host my blog. It's not a big deal, you know. And so I've been hosting that ever since. I think actually I've been there for a year, right? Anyway, so please. New Year's Eve, Christmas Eve, sorry. I'm at my parents' house, and I'm thinking, oh, well, you know, I've got to do a few things. I want to sort out. I had my blog originally. My blog was at /WordPress. And then also I had Storyteller, which is like... a live streaming thing at the root of the domain, keepitguard.com.
Mm.
And I thought, well, I'm not doing much. I might just get rid of this story tonight because it's not actually working. The Chrome, he just sent me an email saying it's not working and it's just annoying me. So I decided to delete it. I started deleting it and I thought, well, I'll clear up the blogs as well because there's a few blogs on there I've got. And, you know, went through, started deleting them. And then, you know what happened? Fucking hell, my blog was deleted. And I was like, what the fuck? Ow. I've been really careful. And I was looking at all the stuff that I clicked on, you know, and I knew I didn't click my blog, but somehow it got deleted. And it really, when I was just, I literally was sitting there for about an hour, always in tears, going, no, I don't believe this, you know.
So if they deleted... you've got a backup then, right.
Yeah, I do a monthly backup. Plus also, I tend to blog a lot from an application called... I can't remember what it's called. It's on Ubuntu. And that makes an automatic...
You blog.
Copy.
Mm.
No, it's called something else. But it basically, it keeps all the entries. So I was able to restore the backup. And I didn't realize actually the WordPress backups actually have, I don't know how it works, but it seems to have all the pages that you create, which is pretty good. And some other stuff, like some of the, when I the Restore, it also included some of the station that I had. And it was really weird. Anyway, so I uploaded as much as I could, and I went through, and the Restore was from, like, December 5th. And so I started to go through and, like, put all the other ones in one by one, which was a bit of a pain, but I did it. And then also now I've got a blog back up, which is good. I prefer it is back where it was. I did the HD access, so everything moves across properly. And, you know, it's pretty good. But what annoyed me was just sitting there on Christmas Day, fucking around my trying to get it fucking working. You know, really, really annoying. You know,
but your blog's very pretty now.
I'm doing better.
Well, yeah, it looks nice.
Oh, it's nice.
It's a nice light green as well.
What's the URL?
Keepitgun.com
will work. Okay. Unfortunately, there's a picture of Ian as well. That ruins it slightly in one of the photos. But other than that, and he's wearing an orange hat, so it looks about like a Klingon commander or something. But
let's see.
But, you know, it's just like, just sitting there, like, literally, I was sitting there, you know, all our family is there, and I'm sitting there, like, you know, with, like, this Christmas hat on, you know, tied to this laptop, like, trying to restore my blog, you know. And it's
yeah, that's right. I'm sure I saw something. Sorry, it's like, I'm with my family. Now I'm doing a blog. Wait, I'm setting up my blog. What?
Ian, sorry, are you really dyslexic?
Yeah.
Really?
What's that?
Are you really dyslexic?
Yeah.
Oh, it must have been like real pain in the ass when you went out to find a good time and found yourself in a warehouse.
What? I didn't get that joke. What? What the hell? What are you guys looking at?
Where did you find dyslexic prostitutes? In a warehouse. Sorry.
Oh, Jesus Christ. That's such an old joke. I didn't even get that either.
I didn't get that at all. Go on. Explain to me what the hell you're on about.
It's the same reason, you know, what did the atheist dyslexic say to the archbishop? I don't believe in dog.
I wasn't being disparaging Ian. It's just a silly joke.
Oh, that is terrible, man.
Haven't you never heard that? Haven't you ever heard that one?
No, I've never heard that before in my life. That's terrible.
Yeah. Okay, so GoDaddy sucks. Yeah. And
GoDaddy sucks. I mean, what I've heard from about GoDaddy is if you try and cancel your account, you can only talk from the upsell from them is supposed to be terrible.
It's like a 17-step process to buy a domain name because it's like, no, do you want hosting? Do you want this? Do you want us to send do you want us to send around an underage teenage prostitute to you?
Apparently the lines are operated by people who reject her from The Apprentice for being too pushy.
I'll give you a field full of ponies. If you just buy a domain name from me, I'll give you a field full of ponies.
I'll give you 110%. No, I mean, they actually have a bad name. They do have a bad name. Though. I mean, for a start, they're adverts.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, their adverts are exceptionally sexist, aren't they? I haven't actually seen many, but...
I found it weird, because you were talking about Zerdy saying, well, how comes geek feminists have a job for this? And they have, and you look at a site and they're talking about, you know, how... Because they are tasteless adverts. You can find them on YouTube. You don't need me to point them out to you. But you can read the bit by the geek feminist, and it's like, you know, in the tech world, although... You know, women and men are more or less on parity. And then you realise, well, you know, no disrespect, Ian, but GoDaddy isn't for people in the tech world. They're for people who just want a cheap domain name, just want to put it up. So, you know, sticking Danica Patrick on probably isn't a bad idea. Actually, it's not a bad idea. That's a whole different thing, aiming things. But it's just, I mean, the whole idea about domain name, isn't that really weird? You've got to get a domain name, you've got to get a provider. And if you're not into this, you just think, I want to have a website. I want to have a... You know, I just want to have a site on the web.
Along to like WordPress.com and, you know.
But if you want to have your own name,
Yeah.
If you want to have your own name, people think, oh, I'll just get a site. And they go to something like GoDaddy and think, oh, well, I'll need all this. And they just get suckered into it. It's just more of a thing. It's like the bubble we live in where we can see where there's the hole to this, and we either accept them or don't accept them. There's people who... insultingly. I'm not saying this insultingly because although we may live in the bubble, other people don't, and they don't care to. They just want to get their stuff done. You know, and stuff and sites like this just drag them in and give them.
That's the reason why I thought you were to go down here because, pretty much, you know, I just wanted to get stuff done. I actually have a hoster which I use for development, and I just wanted somewhere where I could just throw my WordPress up. And I thought, well, because you've got the European servers, they'll be, you know, obviously going to be underutilized. So, you know, I'll stick WordPress on there and away you go. And to be fair, it has been worked so far, except for the fact that, you get upsold to you every point of process. Every time you go anywhere near the site, you get, you need this, you need that. You know, and you're like, I know you don't
I tend to now use Gandy.net for most of my domain name registration. I mean, they're reasonably cheap. They're based in Europe, and
their technique of holding on to customers is just, oh, we're not going to do anything.
Sorry,
can you cancel my account?
Well, and Gandy's full non-violent.
Gandy.net.
Yeah, Gandy. Cancel my account.
Yeah, they're very very into non-violence. You know.
They just won't do anything for you,
No, they're actually pretty helpful, and they give you free SSL, which is kind of nice. You know, not like multi-domain one, but,
keep thing in first class when they should be in third class.
Sorry?
And their servers are all, like, very, servers all have Antil inside, you know, no insects are killed in the making of this. Sorry.
Yeah.
You have to have seen the film Gandhi.
And they're French, so they're always constantly raging against the British, like Gandhi.
On the plus side, I got to say, I also ranted about it on Twitter when the call was saying, I'm going to be here on Christmas Day doing this. And, the good idea, customer service team did kind of get involved and they did, although when you actually went to the links, all it was was just links to their help pages. It wasn't really, in particular, any very particular help. But it was. I was surprised that they were actually around on Christmas Day to do that kind of thing. So,
Should we move on? I was going to rant about South by Southwest and Robert Scoble. So there was a post up on Scoble's blog the other day, which I don't read. I only just go onto it occasionally when we're doing the show to see if there's something which is...
He's still got a blog, has he?
He's got everything else, so...
He's got a camera, and that's all he gets.
Human camera.
There was actually somebody who wrote a thing a while back, and they said, it's if you actually want to contact Robert Scoble, it's a bloody hard thing to do because it's like, every 5 minutes it's like, no, don't send me an email, put a comment on my blog. No, don't do that. Send me a tweet. Put it on friend feed. No. You've got to use this bullshit service which only me and three other people are using. Emails for losers. Get the fuck out. No, but
you are
He put up this post the other day, an industry challenge, build micro SXSW, South by Southwest, to bring fun times at South by Southwest. And it's got a load of bullshit, blah, 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 blah. And he was basically saying South by Southwest, those who don't know, the conference in Austin, Texas, that happens every year, he said South by Southwest used to be intimate and fun with conversations about the tech industry. Now it's got too crowded. I remember waiting in line for more than an hour just to get into an overcrowded, loud party where you could barely move around. Next year is looking even worse. Blah, 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 blah. Hotel rooms are running $800 a night or more. So this is an industry challenge. Do we turn South by Southwest into something that really becomes a parody of itself, or do we try to save it
from itself?
Yeah, blah 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 blah. And he's
basically someone save it.
You know, and he goes on and says, you know, that he was rushing around, you know, Austin to go and go to a party with Gary Vaynerchuk and
God,
boy. And then he says, what we need to do is kill the big parties, blah blah blah. You know, and have a micro South by Southwest experience, and so on. And lots of bloody videos, crap, you know, and it's just strange because you think you've got people like Scoble are the problem. I hate to say it because he's a nice guy and all, but the whole point about South by Southwest is that it used to be for creative people, designers, you know, it used to be South by Southwest. Instead of, before it became interactive, it was called multimedia. And the only people who go to things called multimedia are designers, you know, a few developers. People who are actually creating things. And then all these social media people came along, and you suddenly had journalists interviewing Mark Zuckerberg up on stage and all these people going to douchey panels about social media and going to parties where they can hang around with other douchebags. And now they're complaining because there's too many douchebags. And it's like, huh? There's absolutely no self-awareness here that they are the problem.
How does he define himself then? I mean, I'm a bit worried.
Social media blogger.
I don't know.
He's a blogger. That's essentially what he does.
Yeah.
Reading stuff, posting opinions on it.
He basically, actually, he doesn't even define himself. He just says, go read Wikipedia.
Fair enough.
And so given that he's an American evangelist and author.
I mean, he's sort of supposed to be employed by Rackspace, but I mean, I can't see what he does for Rackspace. I mean, he's just a talking head.
Mm. Are Rackspace still going?
Oh, yeah.
They're doing stuff. And
I thought they'd been tits up by now.
No, don't think so.
No, they buy stuff themselves.
Okay. Sorry, that was another bad pick.
Bad of humor. So, I agree with you about Scoble and, you know.
And sorry, I have to note that by saying he's a douchebag, I'm not saying he's a bad guy. I'm saying
he's a douchebag.
It's not appropriate. No. It's
I'd love to say that to someone's face. You're a douchebag. I don't mean it in a bad way, but you are a douchebag.
People always say, I'm not judging, I'm just saying.
It's not a judgment upon you.
It's like calling someone a fanboy, you know. It's not, or a retard. You're not really judging them, are you?
I think from our standpoint, yeah, it's not quite as bad.
You're a retard, but that doesn't mean, you know, you're wrong about everything. I mean,
the thing for me is that I get very touchy when people say stuff like this because. The nice thing about all this stuff is that it's open to all different people. And it's like in the old days where it was like, oh no, only if you're like male could you come in here. Oh, since all the females are allowed in, it's so much worse. You know, it's that kind of attitude. It bugs me.
No,
it's
not that. It's just the fact that...
It is an attitude. It's an attitude of we don't want the unwashed masses in here, and so they're ruining it for us, you know. We get rid of them.
This is the point about events, right? You're going to select somehow, right? It's like schools. It's like everything. You can't have an event where it's completely unselected, right? You know, if you do a bar camp and you say anyone can come along, that just means the people who can get to the website. At 9:37, you know, whenever you release the damn tickets,
you know,
they're going to be the people who actually turn up.
But you
sorry?
But you do. And that is how you get the Barcamp tickets, don't you?
Yeah. But the point is we've just like for things like Barcamp, we've discussed this and we said, well, you know, should we do it a different way? And you know, we can't really find any other alternative to doing it that way that people don't have more objections to. But the point
is, you tried.
Well, yeah, we've tried.
Yeah, exactly. You tried
all sorts of things. And we've moved even more. The point is, you're going to select somehow, right? And the point about something like South by Southwest is that it's the old fallacy of, you know, build it and they will come. If you're running an event, you're basically helping to define and serve a community. And you're not just serving that community, you're also helping to define it. By setting up the event in a particular way, you're helping choose the sort of people who come along to it. And that's, you know, a responsibility you have to kind of grasp. And the point is that something like South by Southwest has changed dramatically to the point where, like, you know, a few years ago, I was sort of thinking, oh, it'd be really cool. If I had the money, I'd really like to go to South by Southwest. These days, it'd be like, well, if somebody were to send me there, okay, but I would, you know, I wouldn't.
It's a complete victim of its own success because people talking about it were all over the place, and you're thinking, wait a minute, why are people talking about it in Wired and so forth? It got so many different people talked about it that you can imagine that it started getting a different audience.
Yeah, I mean, I'm subscribed to the podcast. I'm subscribed to the podcast, and I haven't yet heard anything from last year's South by Southwest Interactive that I actually care about. And they've put out most of the talks, and there's maybe one talk which I thought, oh, that was interesting. Most of the rest of them I start, and it's like, oh, God, you know, 54 minutes of this? Fuck that, next.
Yeah. Well, I think I sort of felt the same thing happened future of web apps. It started to sound, a lot of the talks were more like mood music. They were not actually either practical or specific or particularly interesting. I think it does happen because there is a sort of large roving contingent of people who don't actually have anything specific to say, but are very good at standing up and talking at these events.
Mm.
And they just catch up with you.
There's sort of like, what's the guy's name? They have a few of those people on Radio 4 too, who just turn up.
Yeah. I mean, Radio 4 in a position where sometimes if they don't have the time to pick people, they have these fillers.
They just tuck a priest on.
That something's gone wrong with the program and these people turn up because they're good at, I mean, I could mention some. I think they turn up and you think, well, we know that they will be interesting, but we equally know they don't actually know anything about the subject.
Yeah,
I mean, I think this subject is actually quite pertinent to you three because you've all sort of organised or helped to organise bar camps, which again is the sort of event that lots of people, especially the London ones, which are huge and well thought of events, in terms of their reputation, in terms of the size of them, they're not huge at all. They're quite small, but they're really good and. You have enough tracks and enough diversity that, you know, you can go into a talk. If you don't like it, you can walk out and somebody may pull a face, but it's not really not done thing to do. You know, you're only there for a short time. Go if you don't. There is some selection. You do see the same old faces at these things. I don't find it that hard to get in. I mean, I've wanted to go for I've been to the past three and I've just turned up, signed up and gone. You know, maybe I'm just lucky. I don't know, but there's a lot of involving about people who don't get to go. But in the sense of you don't actually define who goes because you haven't got any qualification of who turns up or not. You just say, well, you know, apply for tickets. The sponsors get to turn up. The guys who organise get to turn up. And
a few other people who we sneak under the table. But
that isn't that many. I mean, comparatively, there isn't that many.
Basically, people flying from a long way away.
Well, I can understand that. But, you know, it is what it is. But somewhere like South by Southwest is huge, and it's so huge that it's big enough to be fragmented into things that people can make it what they want to make it. So you don't get a whole event. It's not so much. I don't know. It just seems like it's so big. It's not a particular type of event. You know, you get the people who are interested in going for the music side of it, go to their things, and people who are interested in like the social media side, go to their stuff, and you get the web developers probably get together and do that. And it's all about the parties and being seen and meeting people who wouldn't normally
see.
That's exactly it.
I think the point about it is there used to be kind of much more of a community there, and it's kind of been, as you know, has been said, it's been a victim of its own success. And it's strange, because you think, what I don't understand is, why don't people just say, well, what we're going to do is organise more bar camps and more things like that. And then you can split them up and have them all over the place, and you're not having to have all these people who have to turn up, I mean, you know, to Austin or anywhere else for a particular point where everything's going to be fucking expensive and the flights are going to be really expensive. Have something locally that's interesting, and you'll meet, you know, and it'll be more interesting, and actually probably much more useful, because you'll meet people who are actually living and working in the same city, which means you can actually get business connections and stuff where you don't have to, you know, go and live somewhere else to actually follow up on them.
The strange thing about bar camps is they're actually really cheap to attend.
Yeah.
Because if you know the advance you're going. No, but in terms of, there's no overnight, you know, you're not paying overnight accommodation, you know, if you get a train down, or, you know, the whole idea is that, you know, you either get a train down or get a lift or just get yourself down there somehow.
Yeah.
You know, just stay, you get fed, you know, there may be some drinking involved or that you have to pay for yourself, but, you know,
that's all. Well, I went up to bar camp in Newcastle, first one in Newcastle, bar camp Northeast, and I think I paid £20 to get up there, you know, for a coach ticket.
Yeah,
and then I got a lift back with Mark NG. I probably got more out of that than I would have if I'd flown to Austin for, like, what's that, 400
and hung out
quid,
with a great good,
£400 maybe to fly to Austin, $300 to get into the South by Southwest, and then, you know, $500 a night to stay in a hotel.
It's exactly the point what you just said. I mean, and I wish that Herb Kim was actually on the call, because he'd be excellent at this stuff. Is that you know, he runs the Thinking Digital conference, and when he first talked about doing it, he was explaining, you know, explaining to all these people what it'd be like, and he basically said that it's going to be like a TED, it's like, it's going to bring along some of the amazing speakers, and we're going to have all this stuff going on. And he said, it's going to be in Newcastle. And people were like, what the fuck? You know, you're going to bring all these great and good to Newcastle. It's really going to work. And you know what? It really has worked. And
God forbid that the great and the good get on the train to Newcastle.
Oh my god.
Exactly. But you know, that's the thing, is that, you know,
actually, doesn't Newcastle have an airport as well nearby?
Yeah, it does, you know. Very small airport. But this is the killer thing, right? It's that you could with a lot of effort, right? And I'm not saying that he didn't put a lot of effort into it, he has, but you know, you could easily set up something like Film Digital or South by Southwest type thing in another country, in another part of the world, and slowly up, you know, into your own thing, you know? I mean, that's what we're trying to do with Manchester and Future Everything and the Leeds Festival. You know, these festivals are really going, and they've really established a small crew of people that kind of go to it, and you know, they'll grow and grow. And when you're kind of like the stables and then come along and go, oh, it's kind of like it's all sold out, then we'll move on to something else, you know?
Yeah.
That's the way it goes, you know?
Yeah.
But stop moaning about it, do something about it. Set up your stable buddy conference with Flux Lake or something.
Mm, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, but then it's not big enough to get enough people in there to listen to what he has to say. You know, he's not, you know, it's not much of an ego talking to a room of five people when you can be on stage talking to a group of 200 people who are there just because.
This is what Bar Camp has taught us all, is that it's not necessarily about the number of people, although if you're kind of that vain, then I guess it is, but it's about the quality, the right people.
Well, and also some of my favourite bar camp sessions have had like 5 people in them, and it's been interesting because instead of it being a lecture, it's a bunch of people sitting around on a couch who've said we're going to talk about X, and they're not being preached to, or you know, it's no PowerPoint. It's just a bunch of people who are all working on something, and they discuss their opinions and their experiences, and that's actually much more useful because you can ask them questions and you know have a, like a guided discussion, and that works fine.
Absolutely, and this is the key thing. You know, I mean, the best things about digital for me was the sessions were amazing. It was very much like being at TED. But at one point, I was thinking to myself, bloody hell, this is like I've never been to TED, but this is I can imagine this is what it'd be like. Yeah, but it was afterwards, like the conversations and being able to like interact with these people, you sit down and have like a good conversation with people afterwards, you know. And I wouldn't imagine someone that just kind of flies in and flies out, then you ain't gonna get that, you know. And so it's being able to like interact with these people afterwards and like, that thing you said, you know, have you thought this or have you considered this, and you know, bounce these ideas around, you know.
Speaking of weird conference experiences, I went to Deconstruct this year.
Oh yeah, I
don't know why I did it, but I did. It
just,
wasn't just
what
me.
Happens
it's like
at Deconstruct. I don't really understand.
People go far, far, far up their own arses. No, sorry,
I'm not. The weird thing was, I was told it was going to be more of a technology conference, and it was a web conference, and there were a couple of interesting talks there, but some of them were like, even I thought they were a bit, why are you telling people who are web developers about this? I think I sort of knew where the day was going when the first session of the day, where somebody came up and said, you know, the problems of the world can be solved through design. And I thought, you're at a design conference, you've got a designer on stage talking to an audience of designers. Well,
you know.
It's going to be solved by hard maths. Yeah, I don't think so.
I would have put my hand up and said, African, AIDS in South Africa.
Yeah. You have to design the right charity and the right fundraising method for that. But the thing is, I actually had a good time. I had a good time because I was with people I knew.
Mm.
I met other people there who'd come down from Scotland and various other places who I know who are Mac developers or iPhone developers and stuff, who'd come down on the same thing, well, this is going to be a tech talk, and it really wasn't. And sort of got together with them and a couple of people that they knew. And I'm not saying it was a group or a clique or anything, but just sort of in between and talking between the sessions and going out for a drink afterwards. I had more fun just being with people I liked or I enjoyed being with and I had good conversations with than I did actually being at the conference itself.
I think that's in some respects that's supposed to happen.
Is it?
Why yes. Pay
money just to do
getting
that?
Because basically what's happening, you're getting people together and
you're giving them an excuse.
Yeah, you are. I mean, you're giving them.
Do this,
it's an arena to do that sort of thing. So yes, you might have a few good talks, but essentially the idea is you're getting a set of people together.
On the day of Deconstruct, you know, we're going to do it again. Yeah. We're not going to go to the conference. We're just going to go have a bar crawl. We're just get together.
Well, I went to a Wikipedia thing recently, and you know it was a conference and blah blah. The only reason I went there is because somebody various people I know were coming over, and they were in London, so you know, and I don't get to see them. So that's a fairly good excuse to go along because you get to hang out and have lunch with and drink with people you don't get to see very often.
I did something called Lean Camp, which was where Bar Camp was supposed to be. But they had lots of, sort of power tools exposed, and that's when they decided it wasn't safe. But I mean, that was a good example. That worked really well, despite the fact it could have been an utter disaster, because it was sort of, as it sounds like, sort of business people and sort of developer people about how lean works with respect to developing. And
is that the one that basically means nobody can ever use soldering irons in a bar camp again?
That was
the place that we were going to have Bar Camp London at.
Yeah.
But they basically didn't get sign on from the security or the management or something, and then they basically told us about 2 weeks before the event, hey guys, you're not going to be able to use the venue anymore, and we were like, fuck.
And this is, and we were at that venue, but I mean, you're doing something else, but we were at that venue, and you could see, yeah, you would, it was sort of like half finished. You would go through this hall, but you would pass this massive jigsaw standing on its own.
Right.
But because most of the, because it was during the day, and there were like a, you know, a few suit people, not many, you think, yeah, this is a pretty reasonable crowd, but there's no way you could get a bar camp audience to sort of stay overnight with large power tools hanging about.
Something gets silly.
Something bad with it.
Somebody would go in a serious werewolf hunt.
Interesting that conference worked, despite the fact it was technically an unconference, and most people didn't know how an unconference works. But by sort of pushing, in other words, you had the grid and everyone stood in front of there and go, where are the talks? And go, no, it's an unconference, you put up the talks. And everyone, where are the talks? You know, but there were there were a few guest slots and there was a few.
But,
you know,
The thing about an unconference is it can fail. It can fail hideously if you get the wrong people there.
Yeah.
If you get the wrong people there, and you just get a load of marketing blokes up, just, you know, because they're the ones who got the tickets and they just want to talk about their stuff. You can have a bad set of sessions, and if you're not realizing
that's why it seems to me like sometimes it can be not a bad idea if you're doing a new one. Like a new niche camp type thing, to just to kind of do it half and half, like organize it a bit, just as a kind of, you know, for the first time. You say, you know, like if I was doing semantic camp again, I would have tried to pre-schedule one track with tutorials.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And then, you know, so at least there would be something on. And also because you might have people who turn up who have no fucking clue about the topic at all. And, you know, and then the first day they can go to a tutorial, and the second day, you know, it's not like they've just suddenly been plunged into a talk about, you know, some advanced research thing which some PhD student's doing or whatever, or some crazy, like, new technology. If they are just turning up and they're just like, well, what's this all about?
Yeah. The thing about bar camps are you actually have to work at them. When I went to bar camp Bournemouth, you know, I thought a lot of the sessions were that there were quite a few sort of webby sessions that really weren't for me. I could have been a bit despondent and go, oh god, it's not for me. Or I could do what I did, which just sit outside and talk to people, which I found more fun than you know. And I did my own session, and the first I did, nobody turned up to. But hey, and you know, I put it on again, and I got a couple.
That
of people.
Happens, and it's so disheartening.
not really. It was a gorgeous day. I was outside. I had a bit of energy. You know, after I stood there for 10 minutes, I thought it could be worse. You know, but if you're new to a bar camp, you suddenly find that there's no sessions that you want to do. Or, you know, what do you do when you think? And you don't realise that if there's nothing you want to listen to, try and talk about something you want to talk about.
Pop something up, because there'll probably be somebody else in the same situation thinking, God, all these talks are boring.
Or talk to people.
This is why I do a tech session, because it's like, it's something completely different. And, you know, in the end, when you look at the board, and, I mean, especially in Manchester, a lot of the sessions... we've done a few bar camps now. We've been involved in, we've run one here, and they tend to be very technical, you know.
Oh, I should go to them then.
Technical's good.
You might actually enjoy it, you know. But although I think you'd be kind of disheartened by the, well, I won't say if you were. But yeah, I mean, you know, very technical, and, you know, and they, you know, that kind of works. A lot of people, but there's a lot of people that are, you know, kind of not too much technical, more kind of like, you know, just interested in learning new things. Mm. And yeah, we'll kind of go into a kind of session about, you know, how to commit, you know, kind of patches in the Linux kernel. Then whoa, that's quite a jump, you know.
I want to in Bar Camp London was definitely Kerry's one on beekeeping. Absolutely excellent.
I didn't see that actually.
Get a buzz
really,
out of
really
it.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. Not much. Fuck! Christ, that's a low blow.
But Abiza gets the pun award for the week.
Oh well, I thought I'd say it before it went out to the hive mind.
Buzz off. Yeah.
You are. What is wrong with you today, man?
What?
You on some? You like doing that that thing the policeman did in his testimony? You know where what? He has to get. Didn't you hear about that a while back? There was a there was an armed cop who shot some guy, and then at the inquest, his colleagues put him up to putting ABBA lyrics in his testimony.
God. Oh yeah,
or something. Like, it was like some lyrics from various songs. Or song names or something, and then he's been disciplined because this is highly inappropriate.
He made
to have
his entire testimony based on ABBA.
Yeah, it was all song names, you know.
It's just like the man who goes to the doctor and says, "Doctor, doctor, I can't stop singing Delilah." Doctor looks at him and says, "Yeah, you got a case of the Tom Jones." And the man says, "Is that common?" And he goes, "Ah, it's not unusual."
Anywhere else going?
Let's move on.
Yeah.
Kindle apps.
Yeah, right. I bought a Kindle, you know, I do love it. But I was promised, well, I wasn't promised, but I read about the KDK, actual application language, for the Kindle. And I thought, oh, fantastic, you know, it's going to be all these nice little apps, and, you know, and I might even have to develop one myself, and all this stuff, right? It seems like Amazon, they've done it, I hate to say it, right, but they've really taken a kind of slight page out of Steve Jobs' book, right? You have to be completely signed up with Amazon. You have to be completely verified by Amazon. You've had Amazon yet. And the only Kindle apps I've seen so far are all bloody games. You know, there's nothing actually like useful. The whole point is like the app kind of like thing is that, you know, that means that I can build something and like, you know, it might be quite useful and people might find it great and might support it, but they kind of got with like the big suppliers. They've all gone and built games for it. It's what a wasted opportunity.
That's kind of annoying. But the first bit, you're saying that they've taken the thing out of Steve Jobs' book with you having to register and have it all registered with Amazon. How many people out there have a Kindle and don't have it registered with Amazon? Because I'm guessing it's probably not many, given the whole...
I don't see why you would.
Given that one of the whole kind of selling points of the thing is that it's like a integrated experience books. And that, you know, you can buy stuff on Amazon and it just, you know, goes over the WhisperNet thing and, you know, it all just kind of syncs up. And it seems kind of strange that you would, you know, that you wouldn't have it registered.
I'm talking about the developers.
The developers have to be registered.
Yeah, but you can't even have access to the bloody KD unless you are registered with Amazon.
Right.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Does it cost you to get on it?
It's
only really
free.
A problem if it costs you to get onto it.
It's free. Well, that's okay then. It's not like you have to pay $99 or anything like you do for
but
they
reject you
twice.
I'll reject you if you're not necessarily like a serious like big developer.
Yeah, they just I don't know.
Has that happened?
You know, there's
there stories floating around.
Yeah, you know, people have applied to be on the KDK and rejected.
I can sort of see a point for it. You know, I mean, I don't agree with it. Surprisingly, but there you go. Maybe they want to keep people on it who they think are large companies who will actually do something with the KDK, so that when they do have apps available for it, they've got a load of quality apps that aren't just a load of fart and flash fart apps that people would want to go.
Well, and also it might be about people who are likely to be able to maintain the app. You know, if you're providing a mobile app. You know, there are plenty of people who've produced apps for iPhone and, you know, other platforms who, you know, they'll just they'll put something out, and then they'll never update it, and they'll never maintain it, and things will break, and they never keep it up to date. Well, they might be doing it to as a way of preventing against that.
But balance that against like, you know, the freedom to make apps and the freedom to have this diversity of apps, you know.
Yeah,
that's the thing.
You've bought something which is basically the iPhone of ebook readers, and then you're complaining that it's the iPhone of ebook readers.
Yeah, I mean, I love it, but it's a closed system. There's no point pretending otherwise. They might. And
I love this. It lets me be. It's like I can take Ian's role in the argument over iOS. It's lovely.
I can hear Nick kind of like chuckling to himself. You know. You bought a closed application. What do you expect? You know. And he's right in this case, you know.
I think in a way, Apple is sort of... this is one of the cases where I think Ian's and Nick's general hatred of Apple could have some point here. Apple have a system where... it's a closed system, okay, and it's a very successful system for Apple. But it's successful for... It's successful for more than just because it's a closed system. It's a closed system with a whole range of applications.
It's a shiny closed system.
Yeah. Okay, it's a shiny closed system. Whereas the Kindle isn't a shiny closed system. The Kindle is just a book reader that people think is cheap. It's really good for reading books, people say, and they want to be able to do more with it. And, you know, they think, well, it's worked for Apple. Let's see if it works for us. And I don't think you have to have it. I don't think you have to have the paid closed model. I mean, some people really don't want it. You know, Ian doesn't want it. Nick doesn't want it. David, I think you probably don't want it either. And that's fine, you know, you have a choice.
I'm not wild about the idea, but... Give me a Linux, you know, it's only practicality that keeps me on closed platforms.
But the idea is that, you know, if you really don't want to, you can go to a platform where openness is their selling point.
It would be nice to see properly open options. Like, you know, I've got an open ebook reader. By open, I mean... you can put anything on it over a USB thing, and you like basically the sort of a bit like with MP3 players, the non iPod kind of MP3 player. You can just load stuff.
That's what Kindle does right now, though.
Yeah. Okay. All right. But the point is, it will be really nice if, and the same with smartphones, and the same with tablets, and so on. If somebody could actually, you know, basically be like the Compaq of all these, you know, of all these things. You know, who could actually come out and make a, you know, like an open thing. And then we can actually see, have like a proper test and see, you know, Android's doing it a bit, but that's still hampered by the fact that...
But how open a system can you have that is basically designed to run DRM software on?
Well, that's the point. Get rid of the DRM.
Not
necessarily. Okay, yes, that would ultimately be the way forward. But in the same way as Android, you've got a container which allows you to. We dropped off. What's happened there? Oh,
sorry about that.
Hello?
Sorry, not me.
Oh, okay.
It's bloody iOS notifications.
Look.
When you get a notification on iOS, it just bleeps and completely fucks Skype up.
What I was going to say was that in a small way, and I suggested this again to the Windows mobile team ages ago. Like, you have it very open, but then you have a container within the system, which does have this DRM over there, you know, and you can remove that if you want to, but it's there. And like I've noticed it on Android, there is a thing which is like the whole operating system. You can browse it, you can do whatever you like to it, but then there's this container in it which allows you, which is got DRM content in there, you know.
Okay,
and that's the way that they do it.
Yeah, the thing for me actually is like, I've thought about this with mobile phones. Like, you know, there were Linux phones around. I forget what they're called, but even before the Android, there were various phones that you could get, which were like Linux mobiles.
There was OpenMoco.
Yeah. And there was also things like, before that, there was Linux PDAs, like the HP. HP did one and so on. And that's fine. But I think the actual thing which really is missing is not that you can build software. Building software is fine. Like, you can build software for your iPhone or for your Android. But that's not what's interesting. It's writing hacks. It's being able to really fundamentally hack the thing up in terms of, you know, not putting like a new OS on it. I don't care about that. What I care about is being able to script the thing, like I script my computer.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, I'm not sitting there thinking, well, what I really need to do is recompile my kernel. And that's not actually the thing. It's all this shit which I do every day. It would be nice if I could write a little script to make it, you know, be easier. And to do that, you know, that's the sort of Python, Ruby, Perl kind of thing. And, you know, like half my life runs on bloody crappy little Ruby scripts. Why can't I make my phone do that too? And that's actually,
yeah, I mean,
that's much more interesting to me than being able to, you know, as a user, that's much more interesting to me than all the apps in the world.
Yeah, but
yeah, I mean,
again,
that's one of the things that
nobody's got financial motivation to enable me to basically script my phone.
Can't you do that with an Android?
No, there is. In this case, so on my for example, on my phone, I have that application called Locale, which you can kind of, it's not scripting, but it allows you to say, when this happens, do this to the phone, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like we discussed it before, it's like Marco Polo on the Mac. Yeah, it's a it works out, you know, it infers where you are and then lets you you know,
but not just where you are, it's also about different conditions.
Yeah. It's like it works out what your context is, and and then kind of sets things on that basis.
Right, and that's the thing. That's the kind of, I want to be able to do that and more. You know.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly the sort of thing. I mean, like that's. But, you know, there isn't really a motivation for people to do that. Like, there isn't a motivation for Apple to do that, because why do they want me to have that when they could sell me a bunch of apps and make 30% on them?
Yeah, also...
But surely Locale costs money, right? And so all costs money. And so there is a business behind there.
Yeah.
You know, so Marco Polo probably costs money.
No, all these little plugins
for Marco Polo. Okay, so if they made money, and then Apple could you know, sell or access to the deeper rooted stuff.
Mm.
Then there is a business model behind there.
But you know? And Ibiza said, well, what about Android? Well, yeah, but it's still not really the same thing. You know, you can build an app and you can do it in Java or something like that. But the interesting thing about PCs and about Linux is the fact that you can very, very easily go from, you know, having something which is, you know, basically you can go from a simple command line, you know, a simple command on the command line. It's very, very easy to go from that to a script. Much, much easier. You know, there's no point when, you know, if you're having to do something, there's no point at which you're having to open up Eclipse. It's the difference between Xcode and AppleScript. Not that, you know, there are plenty of things wrong with AppleScript, like the syntax for a start, but, you know. please compile us. Please compile us. Set variable A to the integer, you know, with the value of P, blah, blah, blah. Please compile it.
But okay, for example, well, this is one of the things that I'm very interested in. Is, I like the idea of this stuff that you don't necessarily, as a non-programmer, you know, myself, you kind of like, you're introduced to a new way of doing things, and a new syntax, and or new syntax, but like, I'm very interested in stuff like, what's called, like, pipes, yeah, because you can build some pretty amazing things out of
there. Yeah, pipes is very impressive, actually. Yeah.
Now, unfortunately for you guys,
so long as you don't need an if statement,
So yeah, I mean, there should be, it should be clever enough to allow you to have, you know, complete control from a command line, but also to have this kind of nicer interface, which is not so problematic on top, you know.
Oh, no, yeah, I'm happy to use pipes for little solutions. They're very, very useful.
Yeah,
nice idea.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I've got on my machine. I've got a thing called Conduit, which is kind of pipe-like, and I like it very much.
These are just posted in the chat room. Yahoo Pipes is smoking.
Oh God!
Yahoo Pipes is also banned in pubs and.
And workplaces. Outside
workplaces.
Yeah, you've got all these people like outside the pub. They've got to be at least 5 feet away from the door.
They're either having a fag or they're using Yahoo Pipes.
I'll say one last thing that, I mean, I know me and Nick talked about it before, but I really, really would like to see someone build an e-ink tablet, and that, you know, I'm not sure what happened. I'm not looked at the honeycomb stuff yet, but I heard that maybe you might be able to build a honeycomb version for EA.
Have you seen pictures of the new Nook in colour?
No. Is it EA in colour or is it like LCD with a?
No. It's EA. It's colour EA ink, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because the Nook was like half LCD, half e-ink, and that really sucked.
I'm not sure
if a colour one is e-ink. I mean, there will be colour e-ink fairly soon, but
yeah,
I'm sure there are I think it's LCD.
I don't think that's e-ink. I mean, there will come at some. I mean, the only problem, I suppose I have to blame the iPad for this. I got a Kindle as Christmas from a girlfriend, and of course, ooh, first thing she does is try to, you know, tap on the screen. Well, so that I could buy one, play with it, and then give it to someone else, so I don't have to claim to be using a closed system. So, but she starts tapping on the screen, and you think, oh god, yeah. I said, no, you've got to use a little cursor, and it is a bit embarrassing because it is. I think the Kindle's great, but you can immediately see people don't understand why they can't, you know, use a touchscreen. And of course, that sort of works against the principle because that's going to use up more energy, and you know.
Works the other way. I mean, there are plenty of apocryphal stories about people who've sort of been using their phone and gone to their Macs, and they've been trying to, they've got finger smears all over their screen because it's like, no, I can't do it that way.
But I still think it's great, you know.
Then you just get a bunch of grizzled old Unix beards who get their iPads and think, where's the fucking command line? Where's the buttons gone? Anyway,
even where I want to build an e-ink X11 Windows base, then I'll be very happy. All right,
and it'll happen about the same time as hell freezes over. Okay, next.
Honeycomb, here I come.
What should we do next? Ibiza, do you want to do end of year lists? Have you got a nice end of year list?
I haven't got an example of it, but I'm sure you can find your own.
Actually, as you mentioned it, I was looking at the one that a Scoble had.
I saw that.
I had to laugh because they meant. I think Read Write Web mentioned like
yes.
the top 10 things. One of them was the hot startups. Instagram. Fuck off, Instagram! Oh, that's the biggest piece of.
It's an iPhone application that takes pictures and puts them up on the internet
and puts a pretty little skin on.
And applies a half-baked Photoshop filter to them.
These things are ridiculously popular. And then it's making money hand over fist because it's at the moment it's got the social buzz around it. People
are do they charge for it or something? I mean, how do they make money out of it?
Ads? I don't know. What is it? Grab my iPad and look it up in the store.
There's some pretty substantial infrastructure behind it to put all their stuff on it. To host, because
it's fine, it's pretty, but it's a classic example of, you know, a completely functionally useless thing of which you could do all of that using something else.
Well, lets you take a picture, lets you put, as Tom says, a half-assed Photoshop filter on it, and put it on the web so that you can point it to people, which is a way of it's a little more easier way of putting up a picture, giving it a slight little bit of interesting spin and sticking it up. That's going to stick around with for another year,
like TwitPeak, which is fine. But I mean, there's also that YFrog. So I mean, obviously it can. Yes, it can.
Doesn't look as pretty.
I mean that sort of sort of annoys me. What is all this technology for? You know, we should be trying to get to new planets, not fucking rewrite stuff that already exists.
It's useful to some people. I mean, put it this way: I find the whole four-square Gowalla thing completely pointless. But you know, people swear by it.
Yeah, but that is a new area. Okay, so you know, if Instagram is just the same thing that we've already seen, it literally is. You know, and how on earth if that's for top 10 of the year, that probably proves that there's been damn all done this year. You know?
Well, no, it just shows the pointlessness of end of year lists.
Well, and
all that. Yeah.
Did you see the other things on the Read Write Web top 10?
Chat roulette.
Chat roulette's number 4.
Which of course is a collapse.
which is great because it lets you, you know, see other people's penises.
Which I still think is useful on Instagram. frankly.
and Flipboard. Has anyone used Flipboard?
It's an
iPad application. I downloaded it after people were raving about it.
Oh, people raved about it, yeah.
And I downloaded it, and it's basically a shit RSS reader.
Yes, it does.
It has a little bit of thought behind
it. It's a presentation, you know.
It has a little bit of thought. Maybe.
It takes some RSS feeds. It takes hot links from people in your Twitter list or maybe in your Facebook list or whatever, and it RSSs them out, and it creates all the news stories that are being talked about, your friends are talking about, are interesting, and have buzz, and it creates a little magazine-like format on your iPad that you can browse.
And it applies a completely arbitrary, a completely arbitrary kind of weighting to these things.
People love it,
and it kind of it's very cute, and it looks pretty for about 10 minutes, and you think, why would I want to use this?
And people were raving about it, like it was going to win the Ashes on its own. I mean, it's just bizarre, really
fantastic.
And what else is on there?
Dynafire.
I've never heard of Indinero.
Yeah, Square. That's the thing which the guy from Twitter has built. To read credit cards. Okay. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Oh God! On the other ones, Scoble says that on his, you know, big list of startups this year, you know, Instagram. is like number 4. Flipboard, which we just discussed, and Rovio. This is aka Angry Birds.
It's just a mobile startup. Yeah, I mean,
I do not understand it. I do not understand. Like, did anyone? I don't know if we discussed Le Web last time.
No, I know you've spoken about it on Twitter about how useless. How useless it was. We spoke about it before because you said you were offered a ticket and said no.
I got around to watching some of the videos. They actually put them up on YouTube in fairly good time.
Was it Scoble you had enough of? Was it Weiner?
Weiner wasn't there this year. They had one of their like headline people talking was bloody the guy is behind Angry Birds, and it's like, you know, what are you going to say? Well, we made this iPhone app and it's quite popular, and we ported it to Android and it's quite popular. And you fling birds.
The Palm Pre was quite popular.
Is it on the Palm Pre?
Yeah, because the Palm Pre have some very easy take things from iPhone kit.
Oh, okay.
So I don't think they gave a crap about Palm Pre, but it's very easy to port. Yeah. So it's literally the second port.
But beyond that, it's like, well, we sell this game and people buy it.
It's a physics
puzzle
game.
They then fling birds at...
Which were hundreds. Yeah.
At structures and watch them fall down.
And I mean, they did the right thing. It's what? Cute. And it has no sort of hard technical edge, which means that girls will play it, and therefore they increase their user base, which is fine, well done.
But see, what I find interesting about Angry Birds, right, is I don't give really a rat's ass about the fucking game. What I find interesting about it is, if I was there, I would have asked a very direct question, and this question is, why does Angry Birds cost more than the iPhone, and it's free on Android?
Because they have a different funding model on it.
That's what I'm interested in.
I'm interested in that. I'm not interested in the game. And everyone needs to get
hooked up. Well, people will pay for it on the iPhone. That's the point. Where people
No.
Yeah.
People would pay for it on the Android. There are plenty of people who say, we want to pay for it on the Android. Please just get rid of these apps. Just get rid of the ads sitting on top of the game screen. You know, people want to pay for it. But apparently... complete hearsay, but you know, Rovio make good money off the ads on the Android store, and so they're just running.
I'm interested in why did it mean that distinction, and why there's not like a paid for version on the Android or not. You know, I'm just interested in that side of things.
Well, I think the business side of it is that everyone who has an iPhone or an iPad or whatever, the vast majority of them will have registered, almost all of them will have registered with Apple and registered a credit card with Apple. That's not necessarily the case with Android.
Android makes it very easy to set up a Google check-in.
Does
that work in all markets? And there also the fact that Google Marketplace isn't in all markets, and so it's just easier for
radio to put it on ads in all markets. This is the reason why. This is why I'm interested in hearing. Or if he was talking, go to that talk, because I would personally ask him, why did you set up one or the other? You know, interested in that sort of things. I'm not interested in
Yeah, it's probably interesting. Yeah, it's probably about the only interesting thing that would come out of that talk. But there was a fantastic image actually from the conference of Loic Lemure in the Angry Birds costume. Right.
Oh God.
I was hoping I wouldn't have to load that image in my head. Thank you so much.
Only if people throw pigs at him.
It's the other way around, yes.
Unfortunately, yeah.
But the best thing about it is it's rife with photoshopping opportunities. Have you seen the well known image macro, the Internet is Serious Business image. It's a picture of a businessman at a computer looking very dynamic and holding his fist up.
Yeah,
I've won. And then it just has on top of Internet Serious Business, right? you post it up whenever somebody takes something a bit too serious.
Got it. Right?
But you could actually quite easily just take Internet as Serious Business and put it on top of the picture of Loic Lemure in the Angry Birds costume.
Oh my God. Funny.
Anyway, end of your list. So I haven't seen many, which I kind of have stopped reading tech blogs, but yeah, they are all just...
I'm impressed that you've put Spotify there, given that you can't get it in the US.
Well, he did say it's not available in the US.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's quite funny. So a lot of people go, yeah, I've heard lots about that, but I haven't seen it. So
I thought it was out in the US now. Get it in the US?
No.
It's available. Wow.
If you ever go to the US, right, make sure that the day before you go to, like, authorize your computer to actually just log in with Spotify. Then when you go over there, you can show people this weird music service that they're not allowed to use. It's unless you know,
depends on your account. You can get, I think mine works for about 2 weeks if I go abroad. So
yeah, it works if you've been in a country where it's allowed. They give you like a cookie or something that basically lets you keep on using it for a couple of weeks.
You can go to the States and play all sorts.
You guys still use it then?
I use it a bit.
I still don't use Spotify.
I use Spotify, but I'm not a Premier member, so I can't use the mobile app.
I was on Spotify for a while, so I've got their free account, which is essentially, it's free, but I don't have the limits of like the new fee, which is like 14 hours of music or something. I just play.
Yeah, I've got that, and I mostly use Grooveshark now, actually.
I was annoyed, actually, because Grooveshark is completely open and free on the PC, but Grooveshark on Palm Pre, they say, no, you've got to charge. So they're using the same model.
Because it's like, it's a web app.
Yeah, it's a free, very good web app, and then it's a bad mobile app that they charge, which I think is great.
Yeah, you have to pay. Yeah, it's a bit strange, but it's very, very nice. So the main reason I use it is because, I'm often switching between machines. And, if I'm on a machine where I haven't got my iTunes library, it makes a hell of a lot more sense just to go onto Grooveshark and listen to it on there than having
I use Grooveshark because they haven't worked out how to block it at work, so it's great.
Mm.
this sounds more fun than I mean, right, end of year list, right? Here's the grump in a TLDR thing. I'm grumpy about this whole thing. You get to an arbitrary point in a 12-month period and it's like, here's the time where we look back and have a look at everything that's worked and not worked, and we'll basically just get drunk, come up with a list of crap, which is always weighted either towards the really good stuff at the beginning of the year or the stuff that's just crossing your radar near the end of the year and the period. You just make a list up, it fills up space, and everyone just sort of does it, and it's pointless. It doesn't add anything to any sort of discussion. It doesn't, if you want to do a retrospective, fine, but, rather than just...
I think I might need to put on my blog top 10 shits I've taken this year and then just put, like, 10 random...
That one off the curry, number three.
It's arbitrary, and it's basically... But as we just saw with the Scoble one, you just put a whole lot of stuff up and you read it and you... It's almost like one of those pictures where it's just an outline. You fill in your own, I agree with that. No, I don't agree with that.
Also,
yes,
he could have taken the time to do analysis. Does he do any? No, he just goes, weird, analysis. Fail. So that tells you nothing at all.
It's crap. And what really made me grumpy was, I'm not at home, apart from this, I'm at a friend's house, and they had like top 100 celebrity moments on television last night. And my brains were dribbling out of my ears. The complete inanity. Tech list.
Those shows are really bad. They go on forever, and
that's the same with tech lists.
Yeah,
but something interesting has come up with this, and I've noticed this a while, is there seems to be a current trend of adverts on television saying, "Hey," like for example, putting a bet on the game or a football game, whatever. We have an app for that. And the eyes, I thought, it's like, whoa, a browser on your phone. Why do you need an app for it?
Mm.
And I haven't seen the app myself. I mean, there probably is I use apps for things that are on the web. I use an app to read Wikipedia articles because it's a lot simpler sometimes to read that. I use an app for my love film list because it's a lot easier than trying to trawl through all the pages to find your list. It's just in a nice, easy to use format. But I can imagine some of these
apps.
They
can charge for apps. That's the only reason
These are free apps. Well, apart from the articles one, which some workers got into, the love film one's free.
But I think the ones on TV, the ones like gambling ones, they'll be charged apps.
But in a way, I think we're trying to make it a bit more interesting. Here's an app. They're trying to make it a bit more easy for you to make it. I mean, I don't know, I'm not going to download the app to see for myself, so I'm just going to talk out my ass like anyone else. But I just think that it's even I, who you might think would be into this thing, just because you can make it an app doesn't mean you should make it an app.
Well, did you see the have you seen the whole debacle over, I think it's the Manhattan Declaration app?
Yes, yeah.
Which, is the most stupid thing. The Manhattan Declaration...
It's just a load of text.
The Manhattan Declaration is a group of evangelical Christians in the States have put out this sort of statement of their of their beliefs as it applies to social issues of the day, which is basically, we hate the gays, we think they shouldn't be able to get married, and that abortion is evil, right? Basically that, but a bit longer. And then they put out this iPhone app.
Which was accepted,
and then they removed it for some because people complained, saying it's anti-gay and whatever else.
Oh,
and then they're now having a complete shit fit about this, about whether or not the app should be in the store. And it's like, if ever you could find an example of something which would be better served by being a website and not an app, this would be it.
I cannot believe that of all things that wasn't banned, because that's the obvious one. Oh,
it was banned.
This religion nonsense. It should have been. Why did they even let it on? Is it the case they put it on, then they looked at it and went, oh.
No, they put it on, then they had people complain about it.
Oh, then they took it off. Mm. Right.
Things get through. What can you say?
Yeah.
You
have to press a whole button to see the text then.
Sorry, Ian, what were you
saying? I could do a whole rant about. Because the thing about it is, this is one of the problems, right? Is that you've got people who trust the App Store for quality and all these reasons, right? Because obviously Apple are meant to be like, looking after the user and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But then some of this stuff does get through, you know?
Yeah, but you don't have to buy it.
But it's what I'm saying. I know lots of people that just go and go, right, yeah, we try this out, yeah. And it's free, I'll just click. They even think about, unlike Android, where you at least get a warning screen saying, this app will rape you for all the money that you have, and all this stuff, right? You know, at least it's that kind of opportunity to at least review some of the stuff before you go and buy.
Reviews of it on the App Store. They have reviews on the App Store.
I don't see why an Apple app should tell you you're going to be raped because you've already been raped. So what's the point?
I'm not even going to.
Right, now let's move on to religion.
I thought we already were.
No, on the
you just slagged off the Saint Jobs, you bastard. I know where you live.
Well, they probably do actually DNS records, all that kind of stuff. Anyway,
mine doesn't say where I live.
My favorite, I have to say, my favorite list has to be the South by Southwest talk that John Gruber and Merlin Mann gave back in 2009. It has the best title: "How to :149 surprising ways to turbocharge your blog with credibility." Which is basically an hour.
Oh,
hello.
Yeah.
We're still here.
I'm here. Who dropped off?
I'm here.
No, that was just my thing going a bit crazy. Don't post it in chat.
Curiosity, they're not coming for you.
Should we move on? Next topic is net neutrality.
Net non-neutrality, as they were called.
Non-neutrality. Yeah, this has always been a story about what people think about net neutrality has always been revolving around. The only it's got an extra shadow because of WikiLeaks, to be absolutely honest.
Yeah.
So it started off partly because the FCC, it's a communications commission in the States, started to get their teeth into what they would do with the sort of basic ideals of what's sort of referred to loosely as net neutrality. So it sort of starts off as saying you have your ISP shouldn't discriminate between data. In other words, if you happen to be downloading a massive torrent, your ISP shouldn't go, oh, that bastard's just downloading porn again, let's put that on a slow track, or let's charge them more. And the clever one they're trying to stop is people saying, oh, wait a sec, we provide this rubbish video service, so why don't we charge them extra for using Hulu or block it so that people have to use our rubbish service? So clearly, one aspect of net neutrality is to stop this, and that's what the FCC have been looking at. And there was also a confusion because of, like, wireless, and there was that sort of agreement, rather bizarre agreement to say, well, net neutrality is good, but we won't apply it to wireless because, like, yeah, they want to make some money, and so do we, something.
I've got points about that, but that's... I'll get back to that if you want to finish, David.
Yeah, no, I mean, really, all I was going to say is, I don't know if everyone's seen it, there's a nice little sort of graphical thing called the Open Internet. I think it's the
openinter.net.
And it sort of tries to show in a very simple way net neutrality, but there are some interesting problems with it. Actually, the original one at the bottom, it says now, please do your part to keep the internet a cornerstone of freedom and opportunity. When it was first out, it said, please do your best to keep the internet a cornerstone of American freedom and opportunity. I mailed the guy who did it and said, what the fuck are you talking about? And then he corrected it.
Well done.
But the interesting thing about that is that actually it sort of is a little bit of an issue about this, because the whole point of network neutrality is to stop the internet being somewhere where you will, for instance, you'll design some app and then then some provider will, for some reason, slow it down or restrict it, and that actually screws innovation, you know, and that is bad. But ultimately,
makes the web about as much fun as the mobile market.
Yeah. But ultimately, if a ISP wants to charge a bit more because you're downloading porn, let them, because market forces will fix that. You will just join another ISP.
Market forces. What, like, if all three of the ISPs in Britain?
Yeah, obviously, if they all sit there and make a cabal and then say, well, we've all come out.
They do have a cabal. If you're in the States, you don't have a choice as to, well, generally, you don't have a choice as your internet service provider. If you live in a town that's, you know, not one of the major metropolitan areas, the rights to provide cable or broadband for that service has been sold off to a large company, and they're providing all the network to your thing, because, you know, they haven't tendered for that. It would cost them too much unless they had, like, exclusive right to the territory of the area. So up to a point, you don't have that sort of
started doing it halfway through
even in the UK, where we supposedly have a huge number of internet providers, a lot less than, you know, back in the dial-up days. You know, you used to pick up, you know, Internet Mag or, you know, any of these things, and they'd have like a listing of like 300 ISPs in the back, and they all charge different prices. Now that they're all like just brands that, you know, are just kind of faces of big companies like Tiscali or, you know, or whoever, BT or whoever it might be. The idea that there's significant amounts of competition in the UK market is ludicrous.
Oh yeah, there isn't.
There isn't because
it's the same model being repeated, just fractionally cheaper. If suddenly one decided to, you know, randomly, well, we're going to charge more for people going to Wikipedia, which is a ridiculous idea, to be honest. But if they tried to do that, they'd just be destroyed by, you know, they'd just be, the market would just...
The point is, it's not...
It wouldn't happen. Also, I mean...
They could do it in a way to do that. There's
a technical problem here that actually Robert Cringely spotted, that obviously you can have one app being a gateway to another, and it's not easy even through deep packet inspection to work out how that is happening. Although if you are basically using, you know, a torrent, it's a torrent, and a deep packet inspection will spot that. But you can't sort of easily say...
You can set up an S3 server, run your torrent from there.
Yeah, I mean, you can do it. I mean, effectively, you can do a lot of sort of gateways to stop people spotting exactly what you're doing. So, as you said, these things can easily get around, and the net will just...
Yeah, but you know what it's like with these things. The people who know how to do it can do it easily, and the people who can't, they're the ones who suffer.
Absolutely. But I mean, the thing is, there's a massive difference between, although net neutrality is a very general term, there's a massive difference between, I am going to, without telling you, start to block certain things off, and there's a massive difference between saying, well, I might charge you a surplus because this is a bit annoying for us. And they're not both net neutrality issues. One is genuinely possibly going to stop innovation or stop service. The other one's just competition.
The thing which is missing. Sorry. sorry, the thing which is missing in this whole discussion, which used to come up when people discussed net neutrality years ago, the point which would come up is you'd have these ISPs who'd say, oh, you know, Google are using our pipes. You know,
yeah, exactly.
And they're not paying their way. Our customers have to pay to use our pipes, but Google don't. And you feel like saying, but Google are paying their ISPs.
Yes, exactly. Yes,
they're paying for their connectivity to the internet, and your customers are paying their connectivity to the internet. Everyone's paying, you know,
it's a double dip of Google.
Yeah, what they're saying is that they want to have Google pay twice.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's
that's the rhetoric which seems to have been lost. Everyone, like, and that's a really powerful argument. You say, you know, basically what the ISPs are saying is we want to charge content providers twice, and it, you know, and Google doesn't get much sympathy, you know, because they're Google and they got bucket loads of money. But
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But when it's, you know, an individual person. And they're having to, you know, when they're saying, well, you're not going to be able to go to cubicgarden.com or, you know, whatever, you're not going to be able to go to some individual website, or we're going to really slow it down unless they pay a premium to every ISP on the planet. Well, what the fuck's that all about?
I mean, the arguments against it, which I'm obviously talking to the converted here, but for a start, why should an ISP care what is going over the bits? Just give me my bits, you know?
Well, that's the dumb pipe thing where I just let everything go through
and I do nothing, which
a lot of people think is, how the services could work. Yeah, I personally don't think that necessarily works either. But I mean, you start from there. You always start from the dumb pipe.
No, start from the bit that you're just a bit provider. You're not a content provider. What about the ISPs that are content providers? Let's imagine you have Virgin that's providing you your content. And they say, you know, we get people going to watch Sky through their internet connection. Let's slow that down. Why should we give them a decent service, Sky, when they should be buying it off us as part of their television package?
You know,
they
can stop you from getting stuff off the net that they are selling you. You know, so
the problem here is. A, yes, net neutrality is exactly designed to do this, but that's actually illegal. Forget the internet. That sort of attempt to stop the competition is usually illegal in other forms.
Yeah, I mean,
it's nothing to do with the internet.
Anti-competitive.
Exactly. It's anti-competitive, so you don't really need to make extra laws. You just have to sit there, look carefully at what's happening, and make a judgment. You know, you don't need... to get, you know, you don't need anything extra out of neutrality. You don't need an extra concept there.
Why not go the equivalency? So, well, Virgin, they're also providing telephone service. Why do they want to connect calls to BT or to Sky or to any of their competitors? I mean, if you connect your customers through to their call centres, they're only going to take your customers away. Because they're your customers.
You know? There's massive telecom agreements to stop all this. So, you know, BT obviously have a service that touches the cabinet, and they're not allowed to sort of talk to the other bits of BT. So there's the Chinese wall exactly to stop that. We have to spend loads of time reading tedious legal stuff so that we understand this and don't break the law by some daft telephone call saying, yeah, wait a minute, can you stop that? He'll ruin your business. The thing is, the laws already cover these areas, you know.
Yeah, or in the plain telephone thing, you could do the same with, you know, with director inquiries. Now, that's a competitive market. Why do BT want to let people connect to other people's directory inquiries? Well, no, we've made it so that they can.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the whole point is that, you know...
That is what net neutrality is exactly designed to underline. But the fact is these laws exist outside anyway.
In the States, it's, you know, you've got all these crazy right-wingers are saying, oh, this is, you know, some crazy socialist dream to take over the internet. No, it's not. It's a, you know, it's just a way to get the market to function properly.
The market should.
You know, so that you actually have it's doing to guarantee a competitive market.
You
can't leverage your power in the ISP market to give you an advantage in the content market or in the IPTV market or in the voice over IP market. And that's a good thing.
Yeah.
You should have to compete as everyone else does.
Yeah, it's exactly that. It's a level playing field. Unfortunately, when you actually read a lot of net neutrality arguments, as you go to the bottom of that, the openinternet.net, why is this important? They keep on using the word free. Now, I realize that they probably are thinking of free as in free of restrictions. Yeah. Unfortunately, by continuously using the word free, it looks like they're anti-business and they don't want to charge anything. And really, that isn't the point. And of course, if people continually sort of mistakenly think that there's no business involvement here, then of course, you know, they're giving effectively power to the ISPs and say, all right, well, we won't fucking do this anymore. You won't have the internet. You know, it's very important to back up the bits of net neutrality that are actually about net neutrality and not waste time on charging
front. Just got to say, it's basically, it's anti-competitive regulation. You know, it's regulation of anti-competitive behavior for the internet.
That's it. And yeah, exactly. And that is all it is. And that's all it should be.
And it's also protecting, the other point about it is it's protecting an important network design principle, the whole end-to-end principle that the, you know, what goes on between you and the other end, you know, should be completely transparent and, you know, not meddled with.
Yeah, I mean, that's the other thing. Yes, they shouldn't be. You can't put too much. Yes, that's the point. Yeah, it's not so much a dumb pipes, which is true.
You only have to look at what went on when.
Not me.
Sorry.
Not me.
That was somebody checking into Foursquare and it's sending me a damn notification.
Don't worry, I'll read some more check-ins at the end.
What was I saying?
Is there a Foursquare badge where I'm in your computer reading your emails?
No, I mean, I was going to say, the one thing which, you know, kind of showed how easy it is to screw that up was when VeriSign, a few years ago, decided to redirect all unregistered, like, wildcard domains on the .com, suffix to their own search results page. So if you typed in, example.com, or whatever it is, it would take you to a search result page for the keyword in the .com, and within hours of people doing that, there was all these reports of anti-spam software that was breaking because it couldn't do domain lookups properly and all this stuff, and you think, you meddle with the internet at your peril. You meddle with the actual architecture of the internet at your peril, because it's very, very easy to fuck that up, as VeriSign proved. But anyway, should we move on?
Absolutely.
We've got one last topic to consider, which just in case we weren't being controversial enough, religion. Ian, that's religion.
Shouldn't we have a note here saying this isn't a technical problem? And we love all religions.
Yeah,
equally.
This is because this because it's
equally being the operative word.
Yeah, they're all shit. So let's keep that up.
That's actually not as controversial as it sounds, really. Actually, it's actually less about religion and more about. So I was sitting down with a bunch of my friends in Bristol. I love my friends in Bristol. A couple of them are kind of like, they love going to the gym. For example, one of my friends, she goes to the gym, I think, about three or four times a week, without fail. And my friend Chris was wearing this weird that was very fit, actually. Yeah, nice one. Stop. Geez, you're so bad. Right, so listen, right. Chris wears bands, right? And I asked him, well, what's that band? Because you see people wearing these different bands at the...
Is this like a make history type thing? Like a little rubber...
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's not, This one wasn't rubber. It was like rubbery, but they had like a bit in the middle. And so yeah. I was like, oh, what's that? And I thought it was, yeah, well, it's band, like, make history, whatever. But he said, no, this band's got like the magnetic thing in it. And
oh, it was a power balance, was it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's not religion. Like, that's just woo. Okay, well,
all right. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, are you serious? And he's like, yeah. And you know, I told him about how he saw some guy who like was wearing one and like, you know, he couldn't knock him over and all this stuff. And I was like, fucking hell. You have been, yeah, what the fuck? And then he turned around and said, oh, yeah, have you heard about this? And he turned to me, Claire. And Claire was like, oh, yeah, I've got one as well. And I was like, fucking hell, Claire, are you serious? And she was
Ian, you've got to send these guys.
Yeah.
There's a link, right? I'll send you the link after the show, but it's on the Sydney Morning Herald website. Because these things come from Australia, right? They're an Australian thing, and it's been promoted by all these like athletes and you know blah blah blah.
Yeah,
the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission has ordered Power Balance Australia to refund all customers. They've ordered Power Balance Australia to refund all customers who feel they were misled by the supposed benefits of Power Balance bracelets. The wristbands were touted as providing better balance, strength and flexibility by working the wearer's natural energy field. And here's the best bit. ACCC Chairman Graham Samuel said in a statement, Power Balance has admitted that there is no credible scientific basis for the claims and therefore no reasonable grounds for making representations about the benefits of the product. Its conduct may have contravened the misleading and deceptive conduction section in the Trade Practices Act 1974. When a product is heavily promoted, sold at major sporting stores and worn by celebrities, consumers tend to give a certain legitimacy to the product and representations being made. The bracelets sell for $60 on the company's website. And yeah, they're having to give a refund to, you know... Oh, fuck off. Stop typing in the Skype window.
Sorry, is that me typing that's doing it?
Mm, yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Well, it sends me a grab notification. You. Right, yeah. Anyway, the...
I'll stop.
Yeah.
That would be good anyway.
Yeah, that's pretty funny though. That yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
Anyway, you were saying.
So the point, you know, I've had this stuff happen so many times. You know, I went to that lecture a little while ago, recommended by my hypnotherapist, and I can personally see how hypnotherapy could work, right? And you know, personally, my own thoughts is that it worked for me. I'm happy. That's it. Yeah, but it's this stuff where it's like, you know, stuff that's like external doesn't really make any sense, and people are like basically going on like other people's, you know, kind of like reaction to this stuff, which really worries me and bugs me. You know, and I'm like, okay, yeah, power band, whatever. I think they cost them about a tenner each or something like that. And I was thinking, I just said, well, look, okay, it's a tenner. You know, you probably threw down more than a tenner in, like, the last round, you know? So it's not too bad. I was Bristol, so it's, you know, it's not that bad. But yeah, it just worries me. Like, yeah, I was like, literally, I turned to Claire and, you know, Claire's pretty savvy, and she was like, yeah, I love this thing, and if you help me, I was like, fucking hell. I turned to Wahid, and I thought, Wahid, this is the man who, you know, should have more sense, right? And he was like, oh, yeah, I do use that, it works really well. And I was like, fucking hell, oh my God, you know.
Well, that's really the amazing, that's the big question, which nobody can answer, is you've got these things which are quite evidently stupid, right? You know,
yeah.
Whether it's, you know, various religious beliefs or whatever, right?
This isn't a religious thing. This is
whether it's a quack thing or whether it's, you know, bullshit medicine thing or whatever it might be, or whether it might be a religious thing, like, you know, creationism or whatever. You know, there's a bunch of stupid shit which people believe, and otherwise intelligent, reasonable people believe it. And there doesn't seem to be an explanation for why they do. You know, and it's bloody odd. And, you know, I meet people who are like, I met a woman a while back, very, very nice woman, very, very intelligent. She firstly believes that not only she was completely sold on homeopathy, and not just homeopathy for humans, but she believed that homeopathy could work for horses as well.
Probably better for horses.
Wow.
And,
I think I'm going to believe in homeopathy for horses. That's good. Homeopathy for horses! Homeopathy for horses!
Yeah. The less you believe in it, the better effect it has.
Yeah, what's the other thing? Oh, yeah, she said that she was really into astrology. And she said... what was it? She said, what's your star sign? And I said,
oh, that reminds me.
Sorry?
Rest in peace, Tina Marie.
Yep.
Startile, sorry.
Anyway, so I said, I'm Aries. I just pick one, right? Yeah.
You just pick one randomly.
And then she starts, you know, going on about all these things, you know, and then I said, actually, I'm not Aries. I lied. I'm Aquarius. And then somebody else decided, did like a sort of, you know, pretended to be sort of mystic mega, said, oh, there's one thing about Aquarius is they're known to lie about their star sign.
Oh my God.
And then the whole room just burst into laughter.
This is the thing, right? I'm in like this, in two minds. So I've met a kind of woman who I kind of quite fancy, and she does homeopathy. I homeopathy or whatever it's called, right? But
it's not going to work.
Her site.
No,
it's
not going to work between you, Ian. It's not going to work.
No, it might work.
Wait, hold on.
That's a fundamental
difference. Let me just tell you. Hold on. One second, right? So the thing about it, right, is that she wrote on a website, right? Her name is Alex Worsley. She has a site, right?
Well, I'm sure you want to say this.
Yeah, why not?
Okay.
If you get a pang of conscience, then sometime between now and next Christmas, I can go in and edit it.
I'm putting it on Twitter now. Hang on.
I mean, communicate over Twitter anyway. That's a whole different discussion about how transparent I am. Anyway, so the whole point is that on their site, right, it says that she used to be a scientist and she still is a scientist, but her sister was struck down with Galandria fever, and she kind of turned to alternative medicines, and it helped her through it. And I kind of like, okay, well, you know, it's in the same way. I said to my friend, if this stuff makes you believe that it's, you know, you're stronger, then I can't see really any harm. It's just about, you know, as long as you understand that.
There is harm.
There's a really good statement that I hear on Skeptic. There's another podcast, All Skeptics Are Okay, which says that the plural of anecdotes isn't evidence. You know, there's lots of anecdotal evidence for these things, but once you actually put them in clinical trials, they're no better than placebo.
Well, everyone knows
it works for some people. And
the problem, the problem is there's two problems, right? The first thing is everyone says, well, yeah, there's the placebo effect, blah, blah, blah. But that's fundamentally incompatible with how we do healthcare in the 21st century. Because, back before the 1960s, doctors would, you know, had this doctor knows best, completely kind of paternalistic attitude, and they didn't really tell their patients anything. And since then, people have said, no, we don't want this. Patients need to be informed. They need to have informed consent. They need to know what they're going through. you can't just say, you know, you can't just kind of fob people off anymore, you know. And yeah. And the whole alternative medicine thing goes completely against that, because you're basically, you know, deceiving people, whether or not you're necessarily deceiving people. If you've deceived yourself first, that's another matter. But, you know, you're basically, for it to work, you have to lie to patients. You have to give them information which is fundamentally not true, or that's, you know, that's completely in contravention with the best evidence that we currently have. It then works, but that's going completely against the whole principle of informed consent. You know, you're not saying to patients, here's the evidence that we've got, here are the risks and benefits. I mean, you know, and the problem with it is that you have people who will forego effective treatment and use bullshit.
MMR. I mean,
yeah, that's...
You've got things like MMR, you've got things like HIV, you know, you've got...
Malaria. People are advocating homeopathic remedies for malaria.
Yeah, and not just homeopathic remedy. They've also been saying that instead of taking anti-malarials before travelling, you should take homeopathy. And then people take these, and then they go to countries which have really, really bad malaria rates. And we've had people who've, you know, there've been people who've come from the UK, have gone and taken homeopathy and come or other alternative treatments instead of an anti-malarial, then come back and got malaria. You know, and and there's just so many people who were, you know, who stop taking their medication and take an alternative thing instead, and or they never even go and get a proper, you know, get proper treatment.
Well, that's something that, I mean, it's something that winds me up, and now's not the time to bring it up and perhaps do it as we do a medical tech bumps, but. In order to have informed consent, you have to have people who are able to understand or give an informed consent to understand the implications of stuff.
Mm.
Okay. Now, I'm not being paternalistic and saying people are stupid. You know, people have got other things to do. Not everyone understands like the statistics and the math that goes into it. You know, this stuff is difficult. People spend years studying how to do this, and not because they're out drinking every night in student union bars. You know, this stuff takes a long time to understand, manipulate, learn how to use. Yeah.
But that's okay? The responsibility of the doctor to explain all these things.
No, but then you have the responsibility of the press, which is, you know, here's some backwater research. Somebody's published a paper. There's nobody else has peer reviewed it, you know, but it makes a nice little health scare sounding thing. That sells papers. Let's put it out. And people fall into it. You know, they say, well, the paper said this, and oh, the paper can't lie. And, well, yeah. Are you serious? How about think of yourself? Oh, no, we just do what the papers tell us to do.
Yeah. You know, it's like people say
they don't want the government to get into your face and tell you what to do. But then they blame the government for, like, you didn't warn us about this and this danger. So, what do you want? Do you want the information or do you not want it?
Yeah, we don't want the government doing anything for us. Okay, we're just going to release all these people from prison. Have fun.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, the thing is, I totally say about the placebo effect, and I guess, you know, the thing about this would be, you know, she's, you know, from my understanding, that she, you know, just sent around her story as such, and she's probably, you know, she's as much to do with it, even though she doesn't believe it herself. She's kind of like, you know, dealing on people that do believe in this stuff, and she's like added to the whole problem, you know, rather than, like, you know.
Yeah, and I get very, very angry about it, because you have people and they say, you know, like, you get people and say, oh, well, you know, like, somebody I know said, oh, well, a friend of theirs had, you know, got a terminal cancer and that they decided to go in for alternative therapy and blah, blah, blah. And you think, because, you know, it might work. You know, it might work. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, it might work. But why would you want to waste your time on something which just might work? You're dying. You know, at some point you have to say, no, you have to kind of conclude, you know, you're in the final stages of a terminal illness. You are going to die very, very soon. Why waste your time and money on some huckster when you could actually spend your time with your family and friends, actually, you know, enjoying and making the most of the last few months you have of your life. Why would you want to spend that with some quackadoodle doctor? You know, it makes no sense to me. And, you know, people say, oh, well, you know, it the more I think about it, the less sense it makes. And
it makes sense. I mean, playing devil's advocate here, that when you get to a stage where there's nothing else treatment can do for you, and the only thing that's keeping you going positive is positive thought, being able to think, I'm going to go research this medicine for myself, I'm going to make these choices for myself, I'm going to make a choice between these different therapies, you know, that is actually gives you a feeling of empowerment rather than, I'm sorry, there's nothing we can do except give you loads of pain-killing drugs, you know. And I'm not here to take hope away from people, you know, in some cases, you know, for all you know, when it gets to the state where it's not going to do any harm because there's nothing else we can do for you, it's not really an issue. But, you know, issues come when, as you said earlier, people don't take conventional therapies because they believe in the quacky remedies, or they believe erroneous things about remedies. Because they don't understand the research, or they don't understand where science comes from. You know, it's not all about certainties. You know, there is a such and such chance that something nasty could happen. Oh no, not to me.
Mm. There's a guy I follow on Twitter who he's kind of made quite a big fuss about he's got Crohn's disease, and he's made
a young kid, isn't he?
He's been making a massive fuss. He's Rhys Morgan on Twitter. He's been making a massive fuss about the fact that you've got people who are selling what basically amounts to industrial bleach and telling people to drink diluted bleach.
Well, to oxygenating chlorotherapy. Yeah.
And you've got these people who are selling this, and they're going around and they're using support forums, you know, online support forums, to promote this kind of bullshit. And you know, and this guy who's kind of started this all off, he's now gone to Africa and he's trying to promote it to like people for AIDS and all sorts of shit. And you think,
oh no.
And the thing which really irritates me most about this is how little actually gets done by the government. You know, you've got these things which we know don't work, and in the case of some of them, we know are really fucking dangerous. And if you went around selling, like, let's say you made a laptop which electrocuted people, you know, you made a laptop, and due to poor electrical design, it was electrocuting people. They pull that fucking thing off the market so quickly. Why is it okay? And the people who made it would be in deep shit.
Yeah.
Because the patient choice lobby is very powerful.
Yeah.
Because
they want a choice, something that doesn't work.
The alternative therapy lobby is really powerful. You have MPs who are now on the medical committee. I can't remember what's his name. He's a white Muppet.
David Tredinnick,
that's the one. He's on the medical.
He's into astrology, and he's deciding health policy.
You know, stuff, and the idea of patient choice. You know, there's informed consent, there's patient choice, and
actually, there was one MP in Parliament a few years ago who called him the Right Honourable Member from Holland and Barrett.
It does seem to be some problem.
It's actually because Holland and Barrett is actually based in his constituency.
there is some problem with efficacy whereby you can say, you can market this medicine and it's just another marketable product, and somehow they manage to explain this and jump over efficacy. In other words, I can still call it medical despite the fact it doesn't actually work, whereas you can get a car that didn't actually go and call it
so long as you don't actually market as actually being effective for anything.
Yeah, you're allowed to put it in the medicines. You can sell it in Boots. Indeed, Boots, happily shelves.
You can kind of hint that people who have a cough might like to buy this.
Whereas you couldn't sell a pig and say it's an alternative car, because it is. but apparently you can do that. And that, for me, is the biggest problem. It's putting it in front of people and saying that's vaguely. I mean, there's another problem here.
That's a bit of a ham-handed analogy there.
Oh man!
Rice.
We need a pun and bad joke syntax. Like you have to put a pound in a little
Like, that little horn, they go wow, 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 or cymbal clash.
All these alternative therapists have all got their snout in the same trough.
Instantshot.com.
Wow, wow.
It's sound effects.
Have you seen that instantrimshot.com? It's just a flash player that loads up and you just press it repeatedly and goes.
We need.
To end this, I really I like the idea. I love the idea of all this stuff is out there and you can look this stuff up. And we need to encourage more people to have a little look and see, you know. Nice thing about the web is I 5 minutes. I didn't actually spend any time googling, the actual bracelet. I probably found what Tom's going to send me in a minute. But it's just stuff like that. We just need to get more of this stuff out there. Get more people to, like, if you're not sure, go have a little look.
It is out there.
And try and work out for yourself. That's why I love the web. You know, it's just to put all this kind of fucking bullshit, to rest. It's a bit like Snoops. Snoops.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. The amount of times I've used that, when people have got, emails or queries about stuff like that, just look up on Snoops, and bang, it's completely, the whole thing's taken apart,
And actually, I have to say, Wikipedia is improving a lot for this kind of thing. One of the things, I've been editing Wikipedia quite a lot recently. One thing I've found, they actually have a thing called the Wikipedia Fringe Notice Board. It's fantastic. You just go on there, and it's people complaining about people trying to add nutty things to Wikipedia articles. So, if somebody comes along and starts adding bullshit, like pseudoscientific bullshit to an article, you just go and post about it on the Fringe Notice Board, and then there's this horde of people turn up and correct it.
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea. More of that. We need more of that.
But it's down to what we were saying earlier. People should make informed consent about things. We don't want to go back to those where you get some doctor telling you, well, this is what you do because it's good for you. You need to try and make your own decisions in life and do your own research. But if you don't do it the right way, if you just read the Daily Mail and think they're telling me the truth, you're doing the wrong thing, Read the Daily Mail, sure. Read other papers, sure, But I think...
I think there is a problem actually with the current way that we're doing things, which is you get a lot of people who will start using alternative medicine and they won't tell their doctor about it.
Yeah.
And
the doctor probably wouldn't be interested.
Well, there's some really dodgy things which can happen. So there's a herbal medicine which people take called St. John's Wort. It's very, very popular. It's popular all over the place. It's used quite a lot for depression and other similar conditions. And it works. It works pretty well. The problem is that because it's done as an alternative, people take it as an alternative medicine and buy it from a herbalist or some other person like that, then they don't tell their doctor. It has a very, very negative interaction with certain heart disease drugs. And there have been people who've had heart attacks and other kind of major problems because they are taking St. John's Wort and they don't tell their doctor that they are, and their doctor puts them on a high dose of a heart disease drug, and the two just, interact.
There's a problem, Tom, that you're assuming that a doctor, on being told that a patient was taking, in this example, St. John's Wort, would even know what it was or care. Because the problem is, if they're experienced enough, they might actually realise,
if you're going to a heart specialist, they should probably know.
A heart specialist will know, but a GP won't know.
Maybe not, but,
they may know, but it's probably they won't.
Taking heart medication, you probably should be seeing a heart doctor, but...
Yeah, that's true, at some point, yeah. The problem is, I mean, you know, there's a lot of the in-between things that, as you say, are alternative, but they actually are effective, or rather they don't have the expression. I mean, the classic example is vitamin C for colds. There is absolutely no hard and fast evidence that for everybody, vitamin C helps reduce cold symptoms. But, I mean, I certainly use it to reduce cold symptoms, and it seems to work. And
there are some
fine, you just put your hands up and say, fair enough. But
there are some nutty things out there that will, I mean, I have had verrucas that have not gone away, except for duct tape. I told my doctor about this, and he actually said, yeah, you know, some people say it's nutty, and it works with some people, works with others, and it works with me, and I have no idea whether it actually works, whether it was some sort of placebo effect in it, no, or the fact that, you know, because of the way you treat it, which is like have it on for, you know, for a few days, take it off, soak it, and give it a good scrubbing. Maybe it's a scrubbing that got rid of it. Also,
yeah, exactly. It could be any part of that.
It could be any part of it. But it worked, you know. And not only that, but it cleared up a fungal toe infection. Don't ask me how, but that's what it did. Twitter, I'm going to be all over this now. But yeah, so some things work. But to be honest, that was a bit of duct tape on my foot. I wasn't taking drugs. I wasn't injecting.
I'm designing the advert now.
You know,
Khabisa says duct tape.
Duct tape
take
works for
duct tape.
Yeah, that won't ever become an alternative medicine because you can't really sell it to anyone because they just means they have to go downstairs and take some off the roll.
which is why I gave it a try, to be honest, because you think it could work. And I have some idea.
Oh, I've got some hanging about. Yeah.
Even the fact that it keeps it sort of moist enough that you can have a scrub with it. Probably more
I do find
it's also good for punters because you can put it across their mouths and they shut the fuck up.
There's one alternative medicine thing I've always been found a bit weird is, has anyone heard of ear candling?
Sounds like for the porn section, which we haven't done.
No, it's distinctly non-pornographic. Basically, it's an alternative treatment that became quite popular in like New Age circles in the 60s and 70s. And it's apparently a way they basically market it to treat earwax buildup. You know, if you've got like thick earwax and you want to clear it.
Is it you who have the wax buildup that you need clearing out?
I have that quite often.
I had it when I was a kid, certainly.
But they promote this quite a lot. And it's basically, it's a hollow candle that you stick in your ear. And you light it up, and it apparently pulls all the wax out because it creates a vacuum in your ear, pulls it out, which would be
got nicotine in it as well.
That would be hilarious, but no.
I can imagine the off-label
secondhand
use
ear smoking
unions where you put it in your bum hole and then fart while it's lit.
The point about it is that they have this kind of very dramatic thing. So, you know, they'll put it in your ear and they'll light it up. And then once it's done, you know, a few minutes later, they'll take it out and they'll crack it open and there'll be all this wax inside. And you think, gee, wax inside a candle.
Well, I never.
but what's so strange to me is you have these people and they buy this thing and there's, you'd think, right, sticking a candle inside your ear, potential health and safety risks. Let me see.
Yeah,
it's going to ruin the candle.
It doesn't take much of a genius to work out that there might be some...
Especially with the level of ear hair around some people's...
Really reckon you'd ruin the candle, you have to give it back.
Yeah, it's a bad idea.
I lent you my perfectly good candle and you stuck it in your ear.
The tech grump saying, don't do it.
Don't do it.
If you actually do have an earwax build up, right, you call your GP and you say, I need an appointment with the nurse. And they say, in about a week's time. In the week, you pour some oil in every day to help clear it, and then you go into
the special oil or just any old oil?
olive oil.
Just softens, works. No, seriously, that's what doctors just say, yeah, especially for kids. Just put olive oil in.
And then you go in, and it takes about 10 minutes, and they just blast out with hot water, you know, in a syringe.
Yeah, that's what I had when I was a kid.
Do you think, why would you buy this special thing, which has these potential health and safety risks, when you can call your doctor and it's a 10-minute appointment with the nurse?
Because the ear candle's funky, it sounds interesting, it sounds new age, it sounds radical.
And the water thing hurts like hell.
And it's not as funky as talking to your friends about, is that I went to the nurse and had a load of hot air screws through my ear, or yeah, I lit this amazing candle in my ear and it cleared all my wax out.
Mm. Because, you know, Jesus
down my
came
ear.
Down.
That's brilliant.
Yeah. Anyway, we need to do this. Alternative medicine stuff more often because it's hilarious. And it is
moving into skeptic territory. Though.
It is technically technology.
Yeah, air candle technology.
Well, the reason why I'm linking back to technology is because of the, because there's so much information out there now about this stuff, and the same way as the Scientologists tried to shut down the internet, you know, technology can really, us to kind of go beyond all this bullshit, but somehow people still believe in this crap.
Yeah, I mean, actually, there was a little bit that Tom said that was quite important. All of this stuff originates from the 60s and 70s, where all these alternative medicines spread out, but that was part of the alternative culture, and they just didn't meet medicine. There was no meeting between conventional medicine and alternative culture, because there was no meeting between people under 30 and people over 30. So basically, they lived separately. And
they
what's
also
happening
wanted
now
a different
is,
life.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, that was the point, that it was that nobody was suggesting that there was overlap or that they were supposed to be successful in the same realm. Now, of course, we're saying, well, hold a minute. If you're going to Boots and buying this, then something's wrong.
I dispute that history somewhat. Homeopathy and things like that were around a long time before the 60s.
They were around a long time, but they were popular for modern culture.
But the weird thing is, I can't understand anyone who actually looks into what homeopathy does and the way they do it and can actually believe this stuff.
Yeah, if you've got a GCSE in chemistry and you read about homeopathy and you don't laugh, something's wrong.
Yeah.
But of course, if you don't understand medical practices either, then
even their standard thing that water has a memory. I'm sorry, water is recycled for years. That's got poo and pee and all sorts of stuff in it. You're telling me that's got a memory in it?
Yeah, it's got a memory of about 17 other people's shit.
Yes, at least. No, this one little molecule has touched it at some stage in the past.
Mm.
And the fact, the whole
idea... No. You didn't shake it properly.
Yeah. And how many times you had to shake it? And how did you actually test the efficacy of I shaked it once, I shaked it twice, I shaked it three times?
You have to put it in a test tube, and you have to bash it against a leather Bible.
The word is succussed against a slightly springy leather tabletop.
Sounds reasonable to me.
The thing about all this is that, I always kind of say this is, basically, all this stuff is alchemy, and the thing about alchemy is that all the alchemists back in the 1600s or whatever used to do all this crazy stuff to people, and they never used to write down ink, and so they never ever shared the knowledge, and so all the knowledge was like just
Isaac
made
Newton
up
was an alchemist.
The princess.
He was a good one, actually.
Really?
Yep. That's actually he spent most of his time on alchemy. Very little
later
time
years trying to rebuild the Jerusalem.
Gravity and optics were interested for about 5 years. You spent about 25 years.
He also spent a lot of time coming up with bizarre interpretations of the Bible, but that's
just goes to show, just because somebody does something good in one sphere of their life doesn't mean you have to believe them about every sphere of their life.
Well, there's a scientist, but well, you only have to look at the number of people who've won the Nobel Prize and then gone on to become complete nut jobs.
Well, actually, I mean, one of the annoying things is you always get that picture of Einstein years after he did anything at all.
Steve Wozniak.
Yes.
Yeah, that's very true. The point is, end of the day, is that the more we share stuff, the more, hopefully, the more intelligent we get, and it's a more of a matter of, like, you know, working out what is the right things and what's the wrong things, you know.
For tech grump, you're surprisingly optimistic.
It's not enough to share.
Yeah, that's
things. True. I'm a lot
of hate, I have to hate as well.
It's not enough to share things. You have to inculcate a basic idea amongst people who aren't us to actually think, I want to look something up for myself.
Yes.
You know, and that's fine, but there's just as much disinformation out there as there is information out there.
Mm.
And
need a generation of people.
You need a generation of people
who other people go around and say, citation needed after everything.
Yeah. Turn the net to Wikipedia.
Teaching kids how to pass exams. Teach them how to think for themselves.
Mm. And teach them all the ways. Yeah, it's not so much. You've also got to teach people not just how to think, but you've got to show them all the ways people fuck up at it. And it's like anything. The difference between, you know, the wise engineer and the beginner is they've seen all the mistakes. And it's the same with anything. You've got to learn all the ways people fuck up at thinking. And there are countless ways that people fuck up at thinking. And
but as soon as you mention anything about it, you're written off as being elitist, as being techno nerdish, as being snobbish to other people. And it isn't, you know, but it's, you know, we as a group of technological people put a lot of emphasis on teaching yourself how to do stuff, you know, learning from other people's mistakes, you know, making, you know, doing your own experimentation and, you know, seeing how things work rather than, you know, here's one way to do it and doing it that way.
It's supposed to be computer science, damn it.
Yeah. You know, it goes back to the bit on I've had on rants and programming websites. Not, you know, what code should I write, but, you know, here's what I've written, what have I done wrong? Will you learn how to do it better the next time rather than, you know, what's the secret incantation that you lot seem to know that I don't? And it really isn't secret incantations. It's experience and effort and work and time.
And wisdom.
Yeah.
I wouldn't call it wisdom, okay. Experience. Anyway.
Yep.
And on that note,
Let's call it a night, because we're now coming up for 2.5 hours.
And it's 1 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And I'm a guest in somebody's house. So.
Right. So.
Food. Well, Tesco's is still open.
Tesco's online is still open.
Yeah. I'll just find a 24-hour one and just do a drive-by. Yeah.
Did you live in Manchester?
What's the allergy thing? We didn't have any drive-bys. We had plenty of drive-throughs.
You can actually get alcohol right now from a bar until about 4 in the morning. It's not very far from here either.
Classy. Anyway, let's say goodbye. Ibiza, had fun?
Goodbye. I have had good fun. It's nice to finally have a grump after Christmas.
Yep.
Etc. What
else we got David. Bye.
Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Ian. Ta-ra.
Goodbye. I really wanted to hear Cristiano's rant about flights, but, you know, another day, I guess.
There'll be another day for that. And it's goodbye from me. Thank fuck it's over and all that. We'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.